welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner. We are recording this on Thursday, February 28th, 2013, UTC. I'm Sam Minter. Yvonne Bo is with me. Hello.
Yo.
Yeah, we're recording a little bit later than we usually do, both in terms of times of week and time of day, because, you know, all kinds of crazy shit was going on.
Oh, but, man. Know. Yeah, it's been a nutty, yeah.
Whatever.
It's been a nutty, yeah.
Nutty week, things going
yeah.
on.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're going to probably do a relatively short show today. Of course, every time I say that, we end up like recording a 2-hour show, you know? But we've only got two topics on the agenda.
Oh, man.
So one is Melissa Meyer at Yahoo earlier this week set out a new policy for Yahoo, basically eliminating work from home. And there's been a lot of discussion on, you know, is that a good idea, bad idea, whatever. We're going to weigh in. And second topic of the day, we've been avoiding talking about it. We've pushed it off week after week. We're going to finally talk a little bit about the sequester, since the deadline of the sequester is like tomorrow as we record this Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And so there'll be some stuff to talk about. So let's start with work from home. Yvonne, so basically, bottom line is Melissa Meyer came and said, you know, Yahoo has had a whole bunch of work from home going on as of, I forget the date, like a month from now or something. People who work from home will have to make arrangements to actually come into the office. And the reason given is we really want to take advantage of like the conversations by the water cooler and the serendipity of people working physically near each other, basically, right?
Yeah. Yes.
And so then there's been a lot of talk about it. But before we get into that, you know, what's your initial reaction to this?
Well, look, it's not the first time I've seen this happen. Okay. I'm going to say 2006, 2007, when I was at HP. IT at HP decided that that they would not allow work from home anymore for IT jobs because of these same reasons that they're mentioning, okay? Mm-hmm. They thought that development teams and everybody needed to be on the same site, work in an office. If you were in a work from home arrangement that you were like far away from the office, they would help a little bit to help you move. Mm. And if you couldn't move to these primary IT sites, you were going to be severed,
right.
Okay? So let's face it, Yahoo, it's been public, but I know that when that happened at HP, that was not public. Okay.
Right.
I think that for certain types of jobs, it is productive to have the teams in a location working, trying to work as many days as possible together.
Mm-hmm.
When they don't see each other at any time, there is just interactions become an interaction in a conference call is not the same as interaction you get with two people to hang out all day, go out to lunch,
no,
yak, talk, whatever, spitball, do whatever, and then, you know, go and work. It's just not the same because otherwise every interaction that you're doing is only a structured interaction. So I do understand why they are saying that.
But there's a difference, like, I see at least, like, there's a difference between having somebody who is only working from home, like, full-time, work from home, blah, blah, blah.
But that's what I understood. This is, they were talking, because they weren't banning, like, for example, you know, if you had to work a day from home because a cable guy was coming.
And they specifically called that out as an example, but they indicated
right.
that their expectation was that this would not be normal. This would be
right.
like, you know, okay,
correct.
Fine, there's a snowstorm, you work from home. There's something exceptionally going on, you work from home, but not anything sort of like...
Not on the ordinary course.
Just because you feel like working from home that day.
Right, exactly, right.
You know, and I'll tell you, like, my thoughts... I have very mixed feelings about this because I think a lot of this depends on what kinds of stuff is going on, what kind of work you're doing, blah, blah, blah.
Well, that's where you're getting to, because it really depends a lot on what kind of work you're doing.
And I'll tell you, like, for instance, if I work from home probably And this is like days I actually work from home, as opposed to, hey, I'm answering some email at night, which happens almost every night. But
that doesn't count.
Maybe one day every couple of weeks I will work from home. Okay. And, sometimes maybe more often, sometimes maybe once a week, but usually I'd say, you know, every other week I'll maybe work from home for a day. And you know, part of how I determine this is if I have a day that has no meetings, that's a very rare occurrence on my calendar, a day with no meetings. If I have a day with no meetings, I almost always will be like, oh, hell yeah, I'm working from home this day. And I'll tell you that there's it really is a balance here, because on the one hand, if I've got a whole bunch of stuff to do that's basically sit down at my computer and power through shit, whether it's emails or writing documents
or writing documents, gotcha.
Whatever, all of that kind of stuff, I am more productive at that stuff if I stay home and do it. And I will qualify that. If I stay home and I'm the only one at home, you know, if my family is there, it can be a distraction. Okay. And in those cases, I might work from a coffee shop or something, but if I'm sitting at home and I'm by myself and I can like sit there and power through stuff, if I've got that kind of work to do, I am more productive at home than I would have been if I'd gone to work. And there are a couple factors in that. One is the time I would have been commuting, I might be working instead.
Right.
Two is no distractions, no people coming around and bugging you about random things. And also, I just find, I don't know why exactly, but I find my ability to just sit and focus is actually a little bit better at home. And, you know, and maybe I'll put some music on, maybe I'll have some TV on in the background, which you think would distract you, but it actually helps me, like, stay in the zone. Mm-hmm. And here's the big but. I actually completely see the water cooler stuff, because out of the times I stay home, maybe one time out of five, something comes up at work that ends up going on, and I'm like, oh shit, it would be so much better if I was there in person, because there are people on my team that are crossing the hallway and talking to each other about something, and I'm sitting here like going, wait, call me, I want to be in this conversation. But by the time I finish saying that, it's done.
Right.
Whereas if I'd been in my office, I would have heard them talking in the hallway, jumped in, and been involved. You know, and that's the kind of stuff you lose out when you're at home. And every time that happens, I'm like, goddamn motherfucker. The day I pick to work from home, this shit has to blow up, and there I go. You know, and like this happened as recently as like the last few days. I was working from home last Friday and something came up, and it was actually as something came up, and I scheduled a meeting with somebody, and I'm like, oh crap, I'll go in. You know, so I had planned to work from home all day, and then about 11 a.m. something came up and I scheduled a meeting for 3 o'clock and I drove into the office. But like in the meantime, as I'm driving to work, discussions are happening and I'm missing out on them, and I'm like, I should have been there already, you know? And so I completely understand this thing about, you know, you have more productivity in certain types of ways. Like, and if you're making decisions and you're having conversations and you're brainstorming and all of that kind of stuff that involves interaction between people, it is so much better that you're there in person in the office. And I'd say that also applies, by the way, you know, when people are spread out through multiple offices, where you're working with teams that are physically remote as well, you know, that inherently introduces a barrier. And companies do it because they can hire people in cheaper locations and all that kind of stuff. But whenever you have the people at multiple locations, there's a barrier that you then have to overcome to make up for the loss of productivity of being in the same place.
Let me give you an example.
And frankly, I've seen this even within the same city when people are in different buildings, you know, but certainly when people are in different cities.
But let me give you an example. Like right now, when I worked in in my old job, when I went to Mexico, okay, mm-hmm. and I was at the Mexico office, okay, I had a problem with order. You know, we were doing business and whatever. I had a problem with order processing. Order processing was on the third floor. I freaking walked up there and I got in front of that person and they couldn't avoid me. Right. They couldn't say, they didn't get the email, they didn't get the call. They, you know what? I got in their face and I'm like, order's processed. Things is done. I got order processing over here in Macon, Georgia. Okay? Dude, I mean, I might as well be farting in the wind to try to get these people to listen to anything. Okay? I mean,
they're not even at home, but they're just,
and they're not even at home. They are at a center in Macon. Okay, they're not allowed to work from home, and still getting them to do anything for the love of God, I mean, is an act of Congress. Okay, and I realize what a difference it makes when you have somebody and they're down the hallway, you can't freaking avoid them. Okay, they're gonna do what you're asking. If they can hide behind an email or a telephone call, or I'm busy or whatever, or I'm doing something else because they're like about 700 miles away, you know what? They sure as hell will figure out a way to do it.
And it's not just like make them do something. It's also, you know, if they're there all the time and you say hi to them in the hallways and you're friendly and maybe you have lunch with them occasionally and all this kind of stuff.
Oh, they are going to be a bazillion times more responsive to you.
Yeah, because like there's a huge difference between like if something comes up and you need somebody's help and you end up walking over to somebody that you somewhat know, even if you just sort of recognize them in the hallway, you've already got a better position in terms of, you know, getting something to actually happen there. Then, you know, if you're cold calling somebody somewhere else in the company that you've never met in person and you've never seen. Now, with all that, I think that on the face of it, it seems like the policy here that they're going to is a bit draconian. Because I see value in work from... I'm going to get to that in a second. Because I think I know where you're going. But like on the face of it, like I see value in work from home. It's a matter of making sure you have the balance right. Making sure that, that you do have some of that personal interaction still happening, that you make sure availability. And I'd say like, you know, I probably would have lots of doubts about, you know, permanent work from home positions. But, you know, if somebody's working from home once a week or something like that, even if it's a regular schedule as opposed to just, hey, the cable guy's coming over, I think that's okay most of the time. And so I hope they could find a better balance. But, and this might be where you were going, this is what I expected. I've seen a couple rebuttals. You know, there were a lot of people sort of saying, what's going on here? This is completely backwards. Why is Melissa Meyer doing this? And then I've seen a few responses on the web from people who used to work at Yahoo saying, you know, the work from home thing was really abused.
Exactly. And that's what I see. And she's swinging the pendulum because it's just people, you know, the company is a company that's not performing well.
No.
People have gotten way too used to freaking, like, you know, like basically abusing the system and getting paid for it.
There were quotes I saw with people saying the work from home is basically a way that somebody can go sit at home, have Yahoo pay for them while they work on their side projects.
Exactly.
I don't know how true that is or not, but
I believe it. Yeah. I mean,
I believe it happens. The question is, how big of a problem is it really?
Well, but it depends on certain companies and it depends on the situation that you're in. I mean, when morale and problems get bad, it drives that, okay? Because I bet you that a whole bunch of these people used to earn a lot of money from stock options.
And they don't anymore.
And they're getting this paycheck, and they're probably saying, working here sucks, blah, blah, blah. Well, shit. Well, I got this perk. I can work from home. Fine. So I'll work, you know, whatever. I'll respond to whatever they ask me, whatever. And then the rest of the time, I'll just freaking do my own project, and, you know, I'll just get away with it. So I think that's not a bad deal
if you can get away with it.
I remember the story of one guy that was so bad at abusing work from home. I mean, this son of a bitch was a realtor, okay? And the guy at one time was so brazen that he actually put in his cube a guy that was working for him calling realty customers from a cube at the office.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Well, he was out on the street selling, and he was getting paid for doing his job.
Well, you know, here's the thing. Like, I work from home, and yeah, sometimes other things distract me at home, But I feel really guilty about that.
Like, oh my God, so do I.
I'll actually, like, you know, I actually, when I'm working, well, frankly, even when I'm working at the office, I do this. But I'll roughly keep track of how much time I'm spending on various things. And if over the course of the day, I don't feel I've met a certain minimum threshold for how much shit I've done for work, for actual work, then I'll count it a half day, and I'll submit the half day. Even though my management has been like, yeah, whatever, it all washes out in the end. I'm like, no, you know, I had other things distracting me. Whatever came up, I didn't do a full day's work. I'm going to count that half day vacation.
Agreed. You know? I mean, I'm very much the same way. If I go and I say that I'm going to a day from work, and it happened a couple of weeks ago, where you know, I went and I wound up spending far more time, like, on what I thought was going to be an hour endeavor turned into four.
Right.
I was just like, okay, forget this. I can't claim this half a day as a freaking work day. I can't in good conscience. Look, there are certain jobs that I think that are better served by people at least regularly. I'm not saying that you have to be there every day, but at least that regularly are working in close proximity to each other.
Yeah,
now,
absolutely.
There are certain jobs that don't, okay? However, you have to figure out certain way to get people to get together. Look, I, for example, I got a sales team that's not – that the people cover an area that's dispersed. And I'm like, it would be unreasonable for me to get people to come to the office and then to go back out because they're driving out to customers. A day like today, for example, I typically don't work from home, okay? But today I had two customer visits that were right by my house, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So driving 30 miles, 35 miles one way to commute to then have to come back over here at lunchtime that's right by my house didn't make any sense. So I worked in the morning from my house. So, and I've got people that are in sales that are visiting customers or going here and there. So I'm like, you know, I don't make them come to the office. However, what I do is that I do have planned events where we get together.
Right.
You know, there are days, you know, I make sure that there's a number of days that we try to spend together. I'll go and I'll meet them for lunch. I'll go and I'll do barbecues. I'll go and I'll do certain things in order to make sure that there is a team interaction and camaraderie that's happening at some level. And it's important to do that. But that's the thing. It's a thing of the balance. I think that right now Yahoo just basically said, listen, this is a ship out of control, okay? Everybody's just abusing the freaking system. This is just what it seems. It appears a perception in general. You know what? Bring everybody home, and then you know what? Probably later on we'll freaking, like, you know,
loosen up again. Well, and I've also heard people saying, hey, look, this is also, you know, a bunch of people aren't going to like it, and a bunch of people are going to leave, and that's okay because we need to cut costs anyway.
Right.
And that way we can do it with people self-selecting instead of layoffs.
Right. Well, you know, so I think it's true. I mean, because that's one of the things that, as I mentioned, when it happened at HP, they were pretty much, hey, either you figure out a way to move, we'll help you a little bit if you need to move, but you know what? If not, see ya.
Yeah.
You know? And a lot of people were let go. You know? So, I mean, it's a way of doing it. It's a rough one, but hey, you know, let's face it. Yahoo is not the high flyer it used to be. I mean, you know what? I got to give her credit. She's trying to shake up the company and try to get it going.
She's being bold.
She is definitely being bold. Okay. All right. No doubt about it. And I think that, the things that she's doing is to try to build a more cohesive culture, to build a company that works together, and to try to build a company that's heading in the right direction. So, you know, I think I gotta give her credit. I, at first when they hired her, I thought, what the heck? You know, I don't know. I saw her background and where she came from, and I just wasn't sure. I was a little bit unsure whether she was going to have the right, she's a woman, I know what else, the balls to do the right stuff to do this. I know this, you know, but hey, I'm so far, I got to tell you something. I'm impressed. some of the stuff that she's done.
I mean, it's still an uphill struggle. I don't know where, you know, whether she'll be able to succeed in the end. But I mean, you know,
not for a lack of trying.
I mean, you and I on the show probably talked in the last year and a half before she came on about how, you know, Yahoo's essentially in a death spiral, and why didn't they sell themselves to Microsoft when they had a chance and stuff like that.
I mean, that would have been that would have probably been the smart thing, but they didn't. I mean, but I keep hearing that, you see, I still don't understand what the heck they make money off of. I don't even know. I mean, what do they do with it anymore anyway?
I could go look it up, but I don't know.
What's the last time
it's not from Yahoo proper, right? They own other companies that are still making money.
Well, let me ask you a question. When was the last time that you went to Yahoo.com?
Last time you and I talked about on the show, when is the last time you went to Yahoo.com?
Okay, I just went to Yahoo.com. I didn't even recognize this page. Jesus, I'm looking at it. Let me put it this way. It's one of those things. I just got to it. And if you had asked me to describe it before, what I would have described has nothing to do with what I'm looking at right now. So that's the funny thing about this. So there's an article about Liam Rimes wears a see-through dress, thigh-high boots, and rocks bangs at military event in Washington, D.C. I don't know.
Yeah,
exactly.
I think the thing is they own other stuff too. So you think of it's just like AOL. You think AOL and you think the floppy disks, but they own all kinds of other crap too at this point, you know.
I was thinking CDs, but you know, okay.
Yeah, CDs.
I mean, man, did they sure as hell mailed a lot of CDs. I tell you what, Jesus Christ. Man, that was like, yeah, so I don't know. I mean, I did a Google search on Yahoo. It's kind of funny what comes up. But anyway, I think, bottom line, there are certain jobs which there are certain jobs that do get well served by having people working in an office and being there together in order to do certain things. There are. However, there are others that are not. So, you know, I think a group of people developing an application, certainly better served by being in close proximity. A sales team, probably not. Okay? Just mm-hmm. because, you know, of the nature of sales. So, I think that what they're doing is reasonable, being, you know, where the company is right now and what they're trying to accomplish. So, it may be draconian. Some people may not like it, but, you know, tough shit. I mean, you know, hey, you guys went and were on the fucking boat leading this damn company into the shit box, and now you're surprised that they're having to take draconian steps. Boo-hoo-hoo. I mean, you should have, you know what? If you're still there and you're hanging on, you should have gotten off the ship already.
Yeah, okay. And having said all that, I'm still glad that I currently work someplace that has a fair bit of flexibility on that kind of stuff when I need it.
So do I. So
yeah. So
I've got no problem with that.
Okay, let's take a break, and we'll come back, and we'll do the sequester for a few minutes. We'll be back after this boring message.
Ready for the test, Dracula?
I'm ready, Frankenstein. Then let us begin.
Creepy Classics celebrates the classic horror and science fiction films from the silent era through the 1960s, and retro TV horror from the 1950s to the 1970s. Visit creepyclassics.com for all your classic video needs. And when you buy something, tell Ron that the curmudgeons say hello.
Okay, we're back.
Yahoo Inc. is a multinational internet corporation. It is widely known for its web portal, search engine, Yahoo Directory, Yahoo Mail, Yahoo News, Yahoo Finance, Yahoo Groups, advertising, online mapping, video sharing, fantasy sports. You see, that's something we do. You see, that's the thing. We don't do I guess they probably have this fantasy sports shit makes money. Wow. A lot of people like that crap. I personally don't. Yahoo. Let me tell you something else that I found today before we go to the sequester. There's this thing called Pipple.
Pipple?
P-I-P-L. Pipple. Have you been to that website?
I have not. P-I-P-L?
Yeah.
.com?
Yeah. So I went to Pipple.
Pipple.
Okay. All right. And I typed in my name. All right.
Okay. They had people search. Okay. Got it. Yeah.
Okay. They had people. That's how you pronounce P-I-P-L?
People.
Really? But people is not spelled like that.
Well, it makes sense. You can call it Pipple, but it's clearly people.
Because
you search for people.
Okay. All right. So anyway, I typed in my name. All right.
Yeah.
They had Google somehow took old frickin' threads of Usenet and has them on the web searchable.
Oh, yeah. That's been for a while. Yeah.
They had on groups.google posts that I put from 1992.
Right. I've got some posts from that era as well that I've seen occasionally. It's been a long time since I looked at Google Groups for that kind of stuff, but there's stuff out there. Some of which I'm like, oh shit,
I wrote that and it's on the internet. Well, that's my point. I was like, oh shit, I wrote that. It's on the fucking internet.
You know, because we talk now about how everybody should be aware that everything they put online is forever. But like, you know, I've been aware of that for a long time, but way back then I wasn't necessarily thinking it. Like
right. I mean, we were talking about, I'm talking about posts from 1991, 1992.
Yep. Yep.
I mean, I definitely didn't think. I mean, I posted, let me put it this way. I posted on a boating group, okay? Something about Coast Guard fee. Okay. I mean, on September 19th, 1991, for God's sakes. And it's there. I mean, I'm like, what the hell? Really? Oh, boy. So, yeah, apparently
Find Samuel Minter's arrest records. Excellent.
Excellent. Great. Where did Google get all this shit from? I would have thought it was deleted, for God's sakes.
Oh, Usenet stuff? No, there are all kinds of archives of Usenet going back to the very beginning, like way earlier than 92.
Fuck. Well, damn. Wow.
Yep. Yep.
I mean, here's the thing. No, but in this thing, my lord, look, let me put it this way. So that's just the news groups. Dude, I have, like, they quoted me in an article on the Wall Street Journal, okay, years ago. There's that quote there. I was quoted in a newsletter from the Wharton School, okay, all right? Because I participate in a program, and they asked for a testimonial from me, and they put it in a University of Pennsylvania like newsletter, and all of a sudden I'm like, oh Jesus Christ, I was in a fucking Wharton. Here's the thing: I didn't even know. I remember that they asked me for the quote. I didn't even read when it came out, the publication. All of a sudden I'm looking, I'm like, oh Jesus Christ, really? I was on the freaking thing.
Oh, by the way, I just have to say the primary picture they use for me when you search for Pipple on me, and pick the one that's me. It's in Everett, Washington, 41 years old. There's a bunch of others with other
people. Okay, hold on.
But the default picture they use is one I had in photo booth with one of the special effects things on my face.
Oh, Jesus. Well, the one that's showing up like right now when you type my name right now is a photo I only uploaded 2 days ago into LinkedIn to change my profile picture.
Excellent.
Okay. Let's see, 40 to 50. Well, I guess there's a lot of freaking Samuel Minters. Jesus Christ. I mean, I type in my name, I just come up. That's it. Everett. Oh, yeah, there it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see. Your face is deformed.
And I shouldn't have said that it's a photo booth filter, because, you know, obviously that's not true. My face really is like that.
You have all these other better pictures up there. I mean, there's a picture that you put on the internet of me in a tux, and that one comes up.
Yeah, there you go. Anyway, so yeah.
Anyway.
Just reviewing the facts for anybody who doesn't remember for the 1,800 other times we've talked about this. If you put something on the internet, it's out there forever. Even if it's somewhere like you think is private and you think no one much pays attention to, or it's inside Facebook, whatever. If it's out there, it's out there.
It's out there.
And even if you delete it later, that doesn't mean it's gone, because somebody could have saved it. So, you know.
I mean, yeah. I mean, Jesus. I mean, my God. There's stuff on here in this thing. I mean, every address, company, HB, here we go, Puerto Rico, everywhere I've lived. I mean, I'm like, for the love of God, I mean, really? I mean, what the heck? West Lafayette, Indiana. Doral, Florida. I lived there for a while. Miami, yeah, sure, yeah. All there.
So, Yvonne, sequester.
So, the sequester.
So, one thing to say, just to start this out. The date on the sequester where it takes effect is March 1st, which is Friday. We're recording this early Thursday UTC.
Mm-hmm.
This is happening, but it's the same kind of thing. Like, we went over the fiscal cliff at the end of last year. But then a couple days later, they passed some stuff. Nobody ever felt anything from it. This case is, whether or not it's fixed in a few days, it's another case of the effects aren't instantaneous.
Right.
So, like, we're hitting the sequester. All of the mandated budget cuts, et cetera, happen, you know, less than 48 hours from the time we're recording this. It's not like the next day there's a government shutdown.
Right.
First of all, what's the percentage? As a percentage, it's not actually that huge of the federal budget. It's like what?
It's about $100 million. But the thing is that
it impacts... what, like 2%?
It's like a 2% cut? It's $3 trillion...
1%?
God, what am I doing? Okay, it's fuck. Wait, it's 110%. It's 3%.
About 3%. Okay, so it's not like.
Remember, but the problem is it's indiscriminate. Yeah, and the problem is that it doesn't impact like stuff like Medicare and Social Security, which they can't touch. It impacts the other part
right. That
it's more like the discretionary spending, which is. Okay, when you go to that part, it's not just 3% of the budget. It becomes like really, I think the $100 million becomes like probably like 15% of that budget.
Okay, I don't know what the numbers are, but it's around
$700 million discretionary spending, and then you take $100 million out of it. Yeah, it's about.
But it's like, you know, people talk about it as if, you know, we've said before to balance the budget tomorrow, it's about 50, you'd cut about 40%. 50, it's nowhere it's close
about,
to that.
No, it's about 15-20%. Okay, of the discretionary budget. So it's really hitting hard a lot of different things. Okay, no doubt about it.
Right.
That's
over some time. And what's interesting about this in the dynamics of this is that you know, the deal was put in place basically thinking the social cuts will be so horrible for the Democrats and the military cuts will be so horrible for the Republicans that they'll be forced to come to some sort of deal that will do less than this.
Right.
And you know, and again, this comes back to one of those things where if your primary goal is the budget deficit, you want the sequester and you want it to happen. The question is because it's so sudden, does it cause economic impacts besides? And then is like, and also this is the level of service reduction okay, both in the domestic side and the military side. But what's turning out is the Republicans have basically decided, you know, we're all for the domestic cuts that are in this thing. And, you know, we can live with the military cuts. They're not, you know, we can live with them. And we're certainly not going to go into any deal where we raise any more taxes because we did that in January. And so we're done. let's go over. Let's have the sequester happen.
I think that you're talking and they're
Here's the thing on the dynamics, though. Once you get past the sequester and this has happened, I think you fairly easily get a majority of the Congress and the president to agree to reinstate a bunch of stuff on the military side, because they'll be like, it's defense. We have to put it back. It's, you know, we're undermining our military, blah, blah, blah. On the social side, you'll get all the Democrats wanting to and the Republicans still won't. So those won't go back. So this actually is lining up, I think, as something that the Republicans think they can go through this and win because they can put back the stuff they care about.
Well,
and
I don't think the Democrats are going to accept to just put back the military stuff without putting all the other stuff back. I don't think, frankly,
on the other side, I can see the Democrats saying, hey, you know, we're actually okay with these military cuts. We think they're fine. So we're not going to vote for anything to put those back. So maybe the end result of this is we actually get the sequester and things stay there.
The key to that is going to be
how fast does the general populace actually see effects coming out of this?
I think that there's going to be pretty, according to what I keep seeing in the hearing, there's going to be significant. I mean, everybody's going to notice it to a certain extent. Okay.
After it'll take a few weeks for it to kick in, though.
Right.
For people,
I think a lot of people, maybe not everybody, but a lot of people are going to really notice. Are going to start really noticing it.
Well, a lot of people are talking about too. It takes a few weeks for some of this pain to kick in, and really some of the big pain, like layoffs of tons and tons of federal employees, won't happen until later in the spring, like April or May. But meanwhile, at the end of March, the next big deadline comes up, which is the current spending authorizations all expire. So Congress has to pass another continuing resolution
or a budget.
But let's get real. They're not going to do a budget. If they do anything, it'll be a continuing resolution of some sort to fund the federal government. So now everybody's talking about, do the Republicans want to do another, 1995 style
government shutdown? Just shut down the government. Yeah, I would love to see them do that. I mean, that would be quite more interesting.
And that would have more dramatic effects than a 15%.
Now I'm playing Samuel Minter on the show, by the way, who is just like, shut down.
Well, you know, I really enjoyed the last shutdown. And if you remember, by the way, it was in the shutdown when Bill Clinton needed some pizza that he met Monica Lewinsky.
Wow.
So, you know,
there's definitely a lot of
because, you know, he couldn't order a pizza the normal way because the chefs were all gone or something. So Monica brought him a pizza.
You see, I didn't actually remember that.
That's how it all started.
Well, I'll tell you what. I know that I'm going to call Michelle and just say, hey, by the way, if the shutdown happens, could you just make sure you bring your husband food?
I think the Republicans realized that the government shutdown in 95 ended up hurting them pretty badly. I don't think they want to do it again. You know, and so, but everyone, the consensus seems to be there's absolutely no pressure on this March 1st deadline. Everybody's sort of decided, you know, we're doing this. The sequester is happening. And the real battle is going to be towards the end of March on how to continue funding the government. But then it's like, you know, we're still lurching from one of these to another. You know, it's fiscal cliff, it's debt ceiling, it's sequester, it's the continuing resolution to fund the government. And it's like, you know, they've gotten really good at making deals that just put it off for a few months.
Yeah, I know. But look, the Republicans are continuing to just get absolutely hammered over this. I really, you know,
I mean, they're losing the PR battle big time.
They are just completely,
they are not making their case.
They are not making their case. They are completely, you know, the Congress. I mean, you know, hell, congressional approval rating was low. I mean, they have reached a record. Okay, it's like, you know, it's just they've got to arrive at some compromise and show that they do something. I mean, I just don't see them continuing to do this.
I mean, right now they're gambling that, I mean, and this brings up the whole thing we haven't mentioned yet. Like, the Republicans have been making a concerted effort over the last month or so to call this the Obama quester and say this was all like Obama. This is all about Obama, and this is Obama's sequester, and it's all going to be his fault. Oh, but by the way, we actually like it. We think the cutting spending is okay, but it's his fault.
Right.
But meanwhile, it's like, seriously? I mean, I know the American public has a really short memory, but they all agreed to this.
Right.
This was not, you know, and whoever's idea was, whoever was the first one to raise their hand to say, hey, maybe we should do this, doesn't fucking matter, because they all Every single one of them, the president, the Republicans in Congress, the Democrats in Congress, the Senate, the House, everybody, they all voted for this thing. I mean, there are certainly individual people who didn't, but as groups, all of these guys were in favor of this thing. They all agreed that, hey, this was the smart plan. Let's do this. And they all sort of did that little gamble of, well, this is just an awful thing, but we're all going to vote for it anyway, because sometime between now and then, we'll fix it. We'll make it a little bit better than this. But, right. You know, hey, guys, when you pass a law that says this is what's going to happen, don't be fucking surprised if that's what happens.
Right.
And then be like, well, I voted for it, but I only voted for it because, well, I didn't really want it to happen, but I still thought it was good to vote yes for it. Really?
Well, Congress at work.
What about a bunch of fucking morons?
It's just retarded. I mean, they are so fucking retarded and incompetent and just absolutely, I mean, through the decades, you think about different Congresses, right? And different acts that they've done, you know? Think of like, during the 90s, welfare reform, tax reform. In the 80s, there was a big tax reform, Social Security Act, other things, right? I mean, what the hell in the last 15 years has Congress passed that's memorable? They haven't even declared war on anybody, even when we should have declared war, for God's sakes.
I'm sure if I got a reference up, I'd figure out one or two laws. I mean, they've passed things I don't like. You know, there's the copyright enhancements. There's the Patriot Act. There's the NDAA. Practically all the things that, you know, I can remember are things where I'm like, oh my God,
they passed this. Exactly.
And by the way, almost all those things I mentioned were passed by overwhelming bipartisan, near unanimous majorities.
Right.
You know, and that's one thing, like, divided government is one thing, and you can talk all you want about the Republicans and Democrats not agreeing on things, but when they do agree on something, that's when you gotta watch out. That's when they're passing the worst possible
stuff. Yeah. Anyway. So, I don't know. I mean, it's pathetic. I mean, it really is pathetic.
They passed Obamacare.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's good, bad, indifferent, but
even in the end, you know, it was so compromised in the end that I do think that it is going to help a significant amount of people. Unfortunately, it wound up being significantly compromised. So, you know,
I'm trying to, from memory, remember other laws passed in the 15-year time frame you talked about. And it's, again, it's one of the things. I'm sure if I went and looked it up and spent some time, I could find like a dozen different laws of varying levels of significance. They have done some stuff. but you know, most of it's, you know, whatever. Like, I was listening to something earlier today, driving home from work, where someone was talking about the post office, and they changed stamp prices again last month or something. Right. And there's the whole thing about whether ditching Saturday delivery. I talked about that a couple
podcasts. Which they're already going to do. They're already going to do.
Yeah, I talked about that on a podcast that you weren't on. But the point of all this was they mentioned that part of what the last Congress did, you know, we have this, you know, one of our predictions was how productive they'll be, how many laws get passed. But 44 of the laws that Congress passed in the last session were naming post offices.
Jesus Christ, for the love of...
Like, you know, this is the John...
Naming... Naming a fucking post office.
Yes.
Naming a fucking... What a fucking bunch of motherfucking losers.
Yeah.
I mean, collectively, all of them. Republican and Democratic. And independent. They're a bunch of fucking useless... waste of space.
Oh, well, with that, I mean, I suppose it's better, it's still better to have a Congress than to not have one and just have like a elected dictator president.
I
but
agree,
you know, but I wish, we've talked about this before, I wish they would get off their asses and actually claim congressional power and do things that matter.
Right. How about actually passing a budget? How about that? How about you sit down and you go with the other guys, with the other party guys, and you sit down and you actually go through the budget and you actually pass a budget? How about that? How would that be for just doing one thing? Not gonna get that, huh?
Probably not.
Unbelievable.
But you know, whether or not they actually pass the thing that funds the government for another 6 months, we'll see whether they do that. And of course, the answer is they will eventually. Even if there is a shutdown, it's not like it's going to be shut down forever. They'll pass something a few days later. But
I know. Fucking people. All right.
Okay. I think that's a show.
We're done. All right. Thanks, everybody. Okay, all right.
Yeah, thanks indeed. And let's see. We said it would be a short show, so it's about 40 minutes instead of an hour.
That's short compared to our shows. So
yeah, it is. So anyway, thanks, everybody, for joining us. As usual, email me at ablesmay@ablesmay.com with any questions, comments, or thoughts. Post about us on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, wherever you feel like, or just tell your friends to listen to us, because, you know, we like listeners. Yeah, you know, listeners are nice. You know, I haven't run the stats on how many listeners we've had in months. I should do that at some point.
Yeah, that would be nice to see if anybody's actually downloading this. You know, if we've dropped to zero, maybe that could be an indicator.
Maybe that's a sign.
Yeah.
You know, I still get occasional comments from people, so I don't think it's zero.
No, so we're not at zero. Okay,
we're not at zero. So, okay, good. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Tune in next week. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.